District 32, Business Radio. Insights and inspiration. District 32. By today's business leaders.
Hello again, this is Alan Cox from District 32 Business Radio. I'm here with Chris Muir-Smith from HR Department. Chris, what is HR?
That is probably one of the most common questions that I am asked and my colleagues are asked. A lot of people believe that HR is a policy and it's a procedure and it's a couple of forms and it's employment legislation. That's a small part of it. It's so much more than that. And in a modern workplace, it's actually an evolving beast. And what I mean by that is it depends on the culture of a workplace, depends on the industry in particular, the size of the workforce, and it depends on what the mission statement sometimes or values of the organisation is. So, for example, a small workplace may have two employees. They don't need to have 47 policies and a magnificent handbook for two people. They need to have a really good, robust employment contract that covers the obligations for both parties, that's employee and employer, and a couple of policies, for example, which will actually govern behaviour and basically make sure that the employer ticks off the required levels of compliance at that time, because legislation changes and the obligations on the employer changes at the same time. So that's one example. To an employer who may want to have an incredible piece of work around culture, employee value proposition, to having to undertake a management of change. Now, that will require sometimes a team of professionals and a structure that's far more complex. So to actually say what is HR depends on the circumstance.
Nothing HR is ever uncomplicated.
Well, that's our job, to uncomplicate it. And I think it's Albert Einstein. I think there is a well-known phrase where it says, if you don't know your topic, or you should know your topic well enough that you can actually simplistic or make it, or actually explain it in simple terms. And I'd like to think that we're actually able to do that. And if I had a dollar for every time I came and sat down with a client and they were looking at me with the possum in the headlight expression because they've had they've just realised that there's certain changes in legislation, the first thing I need to do is actually remove that, sort of crikey, gobsmacked expression from their face to say, it's okay, this is what it means. And they go, oh, phew, thank goodness for that. And this is how we're going to help you deal with that.
Because if it looks too complicated, we won't do it. I know I won't do it. The easy thing is to shove it away.
And pretend it's not there.
Yeah.
Until the carpet has got that much, popped underneath it that the carpet explodes. And it happens to be at the same time that, say, Fair Work or some other government agency is knocking on your door saying, hi, I want to have a look at your books.
When you talk about policies and procedures, I have to have a procedure for staff or a subcontractor. You do this step first, this is step one, this is step two, three, four. Is that what you mean?
In some cases, yes. In some cases, a policy is that's exactly what the industry wants. They want to have A, B, C, D. This is the process you follow. And if you fall foul of the process, this is where you may end up. Or, this is why we need you to follow something. You don't need to have hundreds of policies or hundreds of procedures in place. You just need to make sure that you cover off, your workflow obligations. So make sure that people are safe from a health and safety perspective. Make sure they have an understanding of what their role are. So that's why you have a really good job description and how that actually at times correlates to an employee handbook or to other workplace policies that may not have anything to do with HR. But there has to be a nice correlation and flow. There's no point in having 100 policies. And I have seen some incredibly impressive infrastructures that have 100 policies, but four of those policies may say exactly the same thing. 10 of them may actually be historical versions that have never been.
Now, Chris, do small business owners need to be afraid of human resources?
It's an interesting question, and it's one of the most common conversations we have with new clients. A lot of small businesses have advice given to them, unfortunately, from resources that don't always have all the facts. So you end up having information provided by accountants or by lawyers who may have an understanding at a basic level or high level of HR, but they don't actually understand the real nuts and bolts around it. So for every workplace, whether you're employing one person or 200 people, you need to have HR in place. HR stands for human resources, so human beings and resources to actually manage your workforce. So it's not something to be frightened of, and you don't need to have a complex process in place. It can be something that's quite simplistic, or it can be something that's more involved. It depends on the requirements of the business, and it requires on the size of the workforce.
What do small businesses need to do to actually comply with HR compliance legislation?
Well, the first thing I would suggest is they make contact with someone like myself or someone within the network, and they get advice. So most commonly, when things have gone awry, it's because they've asked for advice from, say, their mother's, sister's, father's cousin, or a relation in the family that might have worked in a legal office 10 years ago, or well-meaning individuals that don't give the right advice. A lot of companies, they don't actually rate or they don't actually value HR because they don't actually understand HR.
I don't have to fear HR, but what do I have to do to make sure that I comply with the legislation?
Get the right advice for a start. Most often people, businesses come to speak to an HR agency such as ourselves when they're actually in hot water. Quite commonly, people don't actually look at getting HR advice as part of, the basic fundamentals of starting a business. And unfortunately, a lot of people who are business advisors or accountants or the lawyers don't actually advise a small business to go and seek HR advice. It's usually when people have fallen foul of legislation or they've had a grievance lodged against them that they come and seek advice. It's not very often we actually have someone approach us and say, look, very exciting, we're about to start a journey and we'd like to have a really good understanding of how to set that up. Most commonly, hi, I've started a business, I've employed 4 or 5 people, I don't have contracts yet, I think I've got the right pay. I think in one case I had a very enthusiastic couple come to me and say, look, we're so excited, we've hired 2 or 3 people. I said, that's great, but they didn't have any understanding of an award, they didn't have any understanding that there are 122 of them in the federal jurisdiction, and they didn't have an understanding of what their obligations were as an employer.
122 awards?
Yes.
We're not complicated, are we?
No, not at all, not at all.
Let's say that I don't want to employ anybody, but I want to use subcontractors, freelancers. What do I have to do to comply, if anything?
You need to have a really good understanding of what a subcontractor is versus an employee. Now, what a number of people don't understand is, as of July, Fair Work has actually launched sham contracting task force. And that's because a number of industries have actually routinely used contractors as opposed to employees.
In a nutshell, what is an employee and what is a contractor?
I wish it was really easy to actually say in a nutshell. There are in the ATO, they have very helpful fact sheets and a guide as such that you can follow. So it can very much say you tick the boxes and it'll actually give you an understanding of whether or not you sit on the contractor side or the employee side.
From a contractor's point of view, they need to have more than one client.
You can actually be a contractor and actually say, okay, I'm going to pick up a piece of work with someone for, say, 3 or 4 months, and that's what you do. So our advice is to always seek advice before you decide to do that.
Chris, what's the importance of a workplace culture?
The workplace culture it basically underpins the mission values or just the whole purpose of an organisation. For example, if you don't have a healthy workplace culture, you don't have a happy workforce. If you don't have a workplace culture that empowers your employees to grow and succeed and feel that they're supported to achieve what they want to do, you don't have a productive workforce. Employee wellness programs are quite often deemed to be one of the most important part of a workplace culture. If you have a well workforce, you have a really effective and productive workplace. A lot of people don't make that connection.
Have you got any statistics on productivity versus happiness?
Oh, there are many surveys that have been conducted over the years as to the correlation between productivity and workplace culture. I think the most recent that I've read or have an understanding of is that you can have up to 70% or more of the of employees not happy and potentially looking for another role, but because of workplace culture has not been something that's actually been actively supported or investigated, the employer has no idea. They have actually no idea that they have an unhappy workforce. And one of the most common criticisms of, employee surveys, for example, is, well, what's the point of them? Well, the point of them is to gauge where your employees sit, where your workforce sits, and are they happy, and to seek their feedback. So for a lot of workplaces, they forget to do that. They forget to actually ask their employees what they think. And some of the most amazing innovations in a workplace actually come from their employees. They're the subject matter experts.
The relationship between happiness in the workplace and productivity is quite pronounced.
It is.
When a person is happy, and this isn't just happy in the workplace, but happy at home, the old 80-20 rule kicks in. 80% of the energy that's available to the relationship is productive. 20% is spent on maintaining the relationship. But if the person is not happy, it's reversed. 20% of the relationship is productive, and 80% is spent maintaining the relationship. That would support the 72% or 70%.
You're actually spot on. And quite often, say, for example, in a large workplace, HR may only be aware that there are issues in the workforce where a number of grievances pop up all of a sudden out of a department, or the number of people leaving from a certain part of an organisation spikes, and you don't actually realise why people are leaving, for example, until you do an exit interview. And when their reason for leaving is the workplace culture is not doing it for them anymore, or as you've quite rightly pointed out, the energy they're putting into the workplace is non-productive, that's when you have a problem. And it's the work that's involved in turning that around is immense. So one of the most important things for an employer is to actually make sure that you don't get to that space, or you don't, and that's where having sometimes an external organisation like the HR department come in and actually help you. We quite often see things that an employer can't see, because when you're in the middle of it and you're actually dealing with things on a daily basis, you don't actually see things that are quite obvious to an external set of eyes. And quite often that's something that we can actually offer as a really helpful resource. And then we can then sit down with our clients and actually come up with a strategy to actually put in place, I suppose, a project plan or even just employee engagement activities that can actually help roll back the level of negativity in a workplace. I suppose the only other thing is that people don't feel confident is what I call having a crunchy conversation with someone. And what that is like if you're a small business, you hopefully don't have to terminate someone that often. The instance that you would actually have to have what I call a crunchy conversation, where you're actually having to manage an employee, is going to be far less than maybe a larger workplace. And for a lot of people, if you don't have the experience of managing an employee that is unhappy and has become dysfunctional, and you don't understand the process, you can actually get yourself into a hot, into some hot water. And most people don't like managing disputes or grievances. It's not a natural place for a person to be in. And that quite often, if you don't actually have an understanding of how to de-escalate issues and how to deal with, I suppose, crunchier individuals, you can actually cause more harm than good.
What would you classify as a crunchy conversation?
So a crunchy conversation is a polite way of actually a conversation that can be quite confrontational. And that's because the employee has decided to be completely confrontational. They have absolutely no desire to actually work in good faith with their employer, or the employer and the employee are at odds, and they're banging heads, and you quite often need to have an external party come in and actually point out to both what's going on and why they can't continue to operate like that.
So you come in with the helicopter viewpoint, the objective, your objective to what's going on, so that you can actually see and then address the issues between the employer and the employee.
Absolutely. That is spot on. And I had an example of that a couple of weeks ago with an employer who was telling me that they needed to get rid of someone. I said, well, have you actually had a conversation with the person in question? No, I'm not interested because it's just not possible to have a conversation. I said, well, are you willing to have the three of us in a room and let's have a and let's start the process to see what happens? Because neither of them were actually able to see, each other's point of view, and it's not until I asked questions that neither of them wanted to answer, but they had to. You could actually see both of them have an aha moment, and the outcome of it was an hour-long conversation is that they're both shaking hands and they had a really good understanding of where each other sat, and they're actually, the next day I had the employer ring me and say, you know what? I wish we'd done this 6 months ago. He actually came, the guy we were talking to came in the next day and said, I'm really sorry, I didn't actually realise this is what, this is what you needed, and I didn't actually realise this is what you thought I was doing. That sometimes can be just the simple process of having a conversation and basically working out why people are not communicating. Communication and lack of communication is often the root cause of a grievance.
You've been listening to District 32 Business Experts that educate and inspire. District 32 Business Radio Business Experts, 20 past the hour, every hour, Monday to Friday, on District 32, the power of connection.